Welcome to Denver 8's coverage of the annual budget presentations for the City and County of Denver's next fiscal year. These open forums are used by the mayor to explain to members of City Council and the public the detailed recommendations for city agency budgets for the year ahead. Before we begin, here is a list of departments presenting during this session.
Welcome to our final budget presentation, budget hearing. Today is Friday, September 20th, and today we are having our first ever budget hearing dedicated to talking about climate and how the budget is addressing climate change. So I'll start by going around the room and we'll do introductions. I am Joel Clark. I represent Council District 7, and we'll go to my left.
Good morning. I'm Paul Cashman, South Denver District 6.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, President Clark, Stacey Gilmore, District 11.
Chris Arnon, District 8, Northeast Denver.
Good morning, Kendra Black, District 4.
Robin Kinnich, at large.
Laura Perry, Department of Finance.
Stephanie Adams, Department of Finance.
Jamie Torres, District 3.
Kevin Flynn, Southwest Denver, District 2.
Amanda Sawyer, District 5.
Chris Hines, Denver's Perfect 10.
Aaron Brown, Mayor's Office.
Alan Salazar, Mayor's Chief of Staff.
Sky Stewart, Mayor's Legislative Director.
Thank you. And before we jump into this, I just want to draw attention to the fact that today there are thousands of young people who are not in school where they should be learning because they are on strike. And I just came from spending time with a group of students from the Denver School of the Arts who walked down to City Park, and it was truly a moving and amazing experience to hear their passion, but also to hear their anger and to hear the fear in their voice over this global crisis that we are facing, and their feeling that no one is listening to them. And so for that to be happening today while we're here, I think, you know, just to, I don't know, capture the gravity of this crisis that we're facing, and the reason why we are now dedicating an entire budget hearing to going back through and looking at this issue that cuts across so many different departments and agencies, and really looking hard at does this budget, and if it doesn't, how do we address that in this budget and years to come? Are we doing what we need to do to solve this crisis and to meet the science-based standards that were set forth in the IPCC standards? Were you able to grab that? I also just want to read this as well. This is the language that is in Comp Plan and Blueprint Denver. The science is clear. Our planet is facing a global crisis attributed largely to human behavior that is changing climate patterns around the world. This environmental emergency threatens to alter our normal landscape, limiting where we can live, where we can grow our food, and how we are able to access natural resources. As we look to our future, we recognize that reversing our contribution to climate change is critical. How we plan our city can help us reduce our drain on resources and reduce Denver's carbon footprint to eliminate our collective contribution to the climate change crisis. That commitment must be our overarching guide. So a couple things to kind of maybe set the stage for the presentation that we're going to have. And with that, I will turn it over to Brendan Hanlon, CFO.
Good morning. Brendan Hanlon, Chief Financial Officer for the city. As Councilman Clark noted, this is not a traditional presentation that we've had in the past. And our climate efforts are in a time of transition, so I offered to be the custodian of this slide deck. But what you're going to notice is that we have a room full of experts here, because this is an initiative that takes the entire city in order to implement, and that's why we have a whole host of experts in the back who are helping us with these efforts. So I'm going to bring you through this presentation, talk a little bit about the goals that we're trying to achieve, really focus on the new investments in the 2020 budget, and then provide a brief overview of the base budget investments. Again, because this is kind of a non-traditional presentation, it's going to be a multitude of different agency investments that they're going to be reviewing, and then I'm going to turn it over to, for questions, but I'm going to need a lot of assistance from the folks in the room to get into the weeds on answers. So with that, you'll note that we are establishing an Office of Climate and Sustainability as part of this budget. The draft mission, because this is going to take some work, we're going to need to engage a multitude of stakeholders to really revise this mission, but our position that we're starting with is mitigating climate change by advancing carbon-free strategies to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, cultivating resilience in the face of potential climate change-related emergencies, and securing an economically, socially, and environmentally sustainable city for generations to come. Our initiatives citywide are focused in four areas: data collection, management, analysis, and reporting, really making sure that we are measuring those things that are important around climate and sustainability, and that we are affecting change based on data and management of different indicators and reporting out on those accomplishments. Community engagement, outreach, and partnerships. Again, much like one department or one office will never be solely responsible for climate in the city, this will take a multitude of partnerships with the city and its partners across city and the metro area and the state and nationally in order to achieve our goals. We're going to be looking at policy, regulatory, and legislative activities, and as well as implementing programs, initiatives, and actions. And if you could imagine, there's some similarities here to our investments in affordable housing. You have policy changes as well as investments that need to go hand in hand to make sure that we affect the impact and results that we want to achieve. There are four prime strategic pillars here that we're going to be focused on in terms of where we could affect change within the city: commercial and industrial buildings, solid waste, transportation, homes and multifamily buildings. These are areas that produce the most greenhouse gases, and what this city is trying to do is affect change across these four different categories. Key strategic metrics, as Councilman Clark had mentioned, Denver's long-term climate goals to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 80% by 2050 from the 2005 baseline. The IPCC also, the standard that we're trying to achieve, requires cutting emissions in half by 2030 and to be carbon-free by 2050. So these are big aspirational goals that are going to take a lot of work across multiple city agencies in order to achieve. So, as I mentioned in the beginning, this is a data-based initiative, and what you see here is a chart that shows our baseline of 2005, and that the top blue line assumes if per capita emissions had stayed the same since 2005 with population growth. So if we had taken no action at all whatsoever, what would have been the trajectory of greenhouse gas emissions? The orange, I'm going to try to use the pointer here. I know it's a little bit challenging to see this on across the room. The orange is our current performance as it stands. So a lot of investments and a lot of the things we're going to be talking about, we've been able to affect some change with the trajectory of this yellow dashed line down to be able to achieve that 2030 goal. We believe that we're on the right trajectory there, but we still have more work to do. That this solid green line is that 80% reduction, and the dashed green line is the 100% reduction in greenhouse gases. So going back to those areas that we're really focused on, commercial industrial buildings produce the most gas, the greenhouse gas emissions at 41%, transportation 36%, homes at 12%, multifamily buildings at 10%, and solid waste at 1%. These are all areas of investment for us, and thankfully, we have kind of tangential investments. If you could think about the investments that we're making in mobility, ped and bike options, they have secondary benefits in terms of climate and sustainability at the same time. So there's a multiplication factor here in terms of our investment strategy. So new investments in 2020, I just want to remind you all that you have already seen slides on all of these changes in agency presentations. The overview is $8.1 million being invested across a multitude of different agencies. I'm going to get into the detail here in a second. So what is the composition of that 8.1? You have a significant investment from the general fund at 37%, EQ, so that's the Environmental Services Enterprise Fund. Apologies for the acronyms here. I'll try to translate them as best I can. At 26%, climate initiatives, composting, totaling 2.1. Again, this is only the new incremental investment that we're seeing in 2020. I'm going to be going over what our baseline investment is here in a few slides. And then capital projects at 37% of the overall composition of the 8.1, focused primarily on a water quality project in Heron Pond. Listing out just some of the initiatives that you saw in a multitude of different agencies' presentations so far, workforce training that's focused on environmental and climate-based workforce training, facility maintenance, composting investments in the general fund, transit, youth transportation, EcoPass programs of about $1.1 million, and new FTE and programming in that centralized climate office of nearly $1 million. So the total investment snapshot is $40.5 million. So this is the total investment, both new and baseline across, again, a multitude of these agencies. I will say the finance office took the lead in identifying these investments over the past few, I'd say, months, weeks. I think that there are some elements that aren't entirely reflected here. There's some additional investments in CPD that we did not include on this list. We have to go back and continue to refine this. But I think this is a solid foundational number, but we have some more work to do to collect some other investments. So this is where I get into presenting on behalf of agencies. And as we have questions, I'll have agencies chime in on this. So Parks and Rec investment specifically in Heron Pond to adapt to the changing climate and limited resources, to incorporate more climate resilient landscape, protect and expand tree canopy across Denver, and continue to develop best practices to maintain our mountain parks and forests. So that is their overarching statement and goals for their organization. We really focused on one area, and that was the water quality project in Parks and Recreation, but you'd imagine our conservation efforts in irrigation as well go to a sustainability aspect. These are numbers that are not included in here, but it is, oh, I'm sorry, I did not advance the slide. That's what the looks were. So we focused on the $3 million project in this budget, but there are other capital and operating investments in Parks and Rec that are consistent with our investment strategy. Public Works investments. So the Department of Public Works is dedicated to achieving the mayor's goals of reducing carbon footprint, safeguarding our historically marginalized communities of color who are disproportionately affected by health impacts of climate change, powering our city with 100% renewable energy, and ensuring environmental justice and equity as Denver transitions to a carbon-free energy and transportation systems. Total investment across 2020 is $27 million. The highlights are on the next slide. And you'll notice what I was mentioning before, you have a multiplying factor here. We're investing in mobility options that therefore gets people out of single occupancy vehicles. That has a direct carbon reducing effect. So the investment profile here is a combination of general fund, but primarily CIP and bond funds. Flex ride services is in the upper my left, your right corner. CIP investments, bike routes and sidewalks, totaling $9.42 million. Again, this is base and new. Bike routes, sidewalks, pedestrian crossings, and transit, totaling $10.85, nearly $11 million across these categories. There are also some additional operating investments that are occurring. $250,000 in base general fund community education and outreach program. This is around diversion education and making sure that we're educating the public on the importance of diversion. $735,000 for increasing composting drivers. You'll remember that in last year's budget and this year's budget, we are purchasing vehicles. This is the staff that will then operate those vehicles. It is primarily focused on expanding our composting program, which is a major tenant in our sustainability efforts. $900,000 for a composting truck lease. Please remember that this is, again, a multi fund investment strategy. These leases are being paid for out of the Environmental Services Enterprise Fund, but they are being dedicated into the public works structure. And then $2.5 million for additional composting and truck leases as well. That is part of the base from previous years. General services investments this year focus on building improvements, specifically at fire stations, libraries, and two new buildings that we've recently purchased, totaling $458,000. These are to improve the building automation systems and install more energy efficient systems. You'll notice that when we bring new buildings online, we're often buying a facility that was not constructed by the city. So you will see investments in those assets to make sure that we are up to standard for our climate goals. I will follow up here in a second on ESCO, but before I get to these slides were updated. Sorry, mine are out of date. So I did want to bring up the ESCO. This is actually our second round of investing in energy conservation capital projects. This is $1.7 million that is currently sitting in a capital fund to invest. It's the second round. I believe the first round, Laura, remind me if I'm off here, I believe it was $2 million that was invested in the first round. I think that was about 3 years ago that program was started that has been paid off at this point through year-end savings. I believe it was last year. This is the second round of that program, and we continue to use this tool as a way of investing in our facilities, upgrading them, deriving energy efficiency, and then using that efficiency to pay those obligations. We've talked repeatedly about electric vehicles over the past few years. $6.8 million of investment in electric vehicles to total 200 vehicles that will be purchased by the end of 2020. We have also invested additional funds in electric vehicle infrastructure, because you need both the vehicle and the infrastructure by which to charge it, not only for our own vehicles, but also accessible to the public. You'll notice over by the Permit Center, we have a number of stations that we built out for not only our own use, but for the public's use as well. Public health investments, I believe that you have seen this slide already. This is really about the establishment of the new climate office. These are investments that are derived from both the general fund as well as the Environmental Services Enterprise Fund. There is an increment of staff that has been traditionally funded out of the Environmental Services Enterprise Fund that is coming over to the general fund, repairing some revenue from the Environmental Services Enterprise Fund with general fund revenue to ensure that we have a staffed office. Some of the initiatives, we're looking at about 11 new positions, and some of the highlights of what we're funding are marketing campaign for building energy efficiency. So remember, we're looking at those buildings that produce the most carbon emissions. Single-family heat pump and weatherization incentives, climate resiliency Denver plan update from the 2015 plan, certifiably green business incentives as well, and as well as making sure that we're conducting analysis and maintaining a strong data set so that way we know what that return on investment is around our climate investments. In CPD, this is a new increment of one additional position for green building compliance. One of the things that we had forgot to reference in the 2019 budget was 2.75 FTEs that were added for the Green Roofs Initiative. So we did not call it out on the slide. That's why we're going to be going back through agency budgets and making sure that we go back in and capture everything. But there's an additional 2 3/4 positions that are related to the green building initiatives that are in CPD as well. RTD EcoPass program, we have OHR and OCR working together to invest $2 million in the RTD EcoPass. This was a big initiative last year, making sure that the city is buying down the cost of those passes and making it more accessible to employees. In 2019, our ridership is at 2,879 employees for that program. That is up from 1,661 in 2017. So we're starting to see that kind of behavioral change and getting people out of those single occupancy vehicles, starting with ourselves and our own employees. Last and certainly not least, again, these are slides that were reviewed as part of the the airport's presentation the other day, a multitude of different initiatives there, both in terms of renewable energy purchases, solar arrays that are being leveraged out at the airport, green building for leadership in energy environmental design, certified buildings, including LEED Platinum at the hotel. So I think that the airport has really tried to bake this value into how they operate on a day-to-day basis. I'm not going to reread all of these because we did present these the other day, but they do have a energy master plan as well as a new large-scale solar project out of the airport, and then there are new, so the real estate program that they are implementing, they are building sustainability goals into any new real estate development that is going to be going on adjacent to the airport. And then these are just some highlights, some sustainability highlights. I think Scott the other day had called out the donated food and the 150,000 meal equivalents, which is just an incredible achievement. Mobility, all Den employees are offered eco passes, so that is an opportunity for them because of the connectivity that they have at that facility to use public transportation to commute to and from that from that facility. And then lastly, water quality. Den collects an industry-leading 70% of the de-icing fluid applied to aircraft each winter. This is a huge initiative that I've been briefed on in the past, and they take that collection very seriously because it does help prevent environmental issues. So with that, that concludes our overview slides, and we have left plenty of time for questions, and I have about 40 people to help me answer.
Thank you, and thank you for shepherding in our multi-agency presentation here, and thank you for the work that I know it went into doing something a little bit different than what we've done. I want to welcome the mayor to the table, and then I have to admit I have forgotten, were there council members who didn't get a chance to introduce themselves who came in, or was everybody here when we started? Looks like everybody's here. All right, I apologize. Okay, so I've got some people in the queue. Councilman Hines, you're first up.
Thank you, Mr. President. And thank you for putting together this presentation. Climate change is real. I think that was day one when I was inaugurated. We had a conversation. We had a city council meeting. It was the first thing I said. And I'm going to keep talking about it because it is the defining moment of us in Denver. It truly affects our habitability on this planet. And I want to talk for a moment about who's here in the audience. This is the most attended presentation of all the presentations, and we have generations here. I found that our youngest is 5 years old, and we have people here. You know, it affects everyone from 5 years old to 95 years old, we have high school kids here. So thank you also for coming. I'm glad that we're focusing on this, that we're breaking it out, and that we are talking about it in, as a thing in itself, in addition to all our other departments. It is critical for us to do. I also noticed that our Director of Public Works is in the audience. Yesterday, I said I want to be his best friend. I still want to be your best friend. And I talked about how transportation. Mobility is my top issue. It very much aligns with climate change. I talked a lot about in the last year about the 20-minute neighborhood, as in we should have things accessible within a 20-minute walk, ride, or roll from where we live so that we can get out of our single-occupant vehicles. Your slide has transportation as the number two emitter of greenhouse gases, I think. The EPA has it as number one. But either way, it's a pretty big issue. So I'm so glad to see that there is an investment with Public Works. I think I saw $28 million, but I don't know for certain. Director, I'd love to continue to work with you to make sure that we have viable non-car options so that we can protect our planet. It's also good for physical health, and it's good for community. So again, thank you for all you do. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Councilman. And if you don't mind, there was a piece in there that you didn't frame as a question, but can we, I believe we in the presentation we had before, the difference in buildings and transportation is Denver versus nationwide, but maybe can we have somebody from staff who can just walk us through that? That's my recollection from our climate presentation, but is there somebody who can talk to that?
I think I'm going to look to Greg, please.
Hi, Greg Thomas, Environmental Quality Division Director. So, yeah, I mean, when EPA looks at that nationally, the average does show that transportation throughout the United States is the biggest emitter. It's close in Denver, but we have a lot of commercial buildings here, a lot of big buildings, and so that's why you see that. And if we were talking about air pollution and not greenhouse gases, that would flip around.
Sure. And so thank you for that clarification and comment. We are, the State Demographer's Office is expecting the city of Denver to have an additional 200,000 people move to the city by 2040. So while you're right, it's good for us to measure Denver's metric today. We are going to have people come from all over the nation and the world here. So we certainly want to tackle transportation as one of the many items that that will help us preserve our habitability on the planet. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman. Councilwoman Kenich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to go back to the slide about performance contracting and acknowledge that I have been doing some back and forth with the department, and I'm just a little bit confused. So I'm sorry if you can just walk me through. So the plan that the city has for performance contracting in the current, there's that 60-page building efficiency plan for the climate. It says we need $15 million. The budget request was $5 million. So I'm just curious about, is this one point, if this says 1.7 in existing funds, so is there zero new dollars in 2020?
For ESCOs, we're leveraging this 1.7 first.
Okay.
So, but we're going to have to go through a conversation to leverage additional funds in future budgets to continue to use this tool.
Okay, so here's my question. So there's an RFP out now. So, we will be using this 1.7 to leverage. And can you just refresh, folks? So the way, because I think for some of us, seeing as we get paid back, it was surprising to learn that we have to put money up front. So is there not a way to do this model without putting the cash up front and simply, I thought the model worked, that the vendor takes the risk of delivering the benefit and then gets paid back with the energy across time. So can you just walk us through why we're needing upfront dollars when that's the intent of the model?
Right. So there, from reading over the past few weeks now about this program, there are different methodologies that you could leverage. You can have a vendor pay for it all up front, and then you pay them back. It's essentially like a loan program,
right.
You know. But you pay a higher interest rate if you were to do that, because you're paying for their cost of capital to implement. There's also an option where you buy the efficiency up front, and you partner with them on monitoring and making sure that return on investment is achieved. I think this is the more conservative model. I think it's going to be informed, though, by what the RFP says when it comes back with different proposals to allow us to either leverage a cash up front or maybe even a partial payment up front to bring down that cost over time, or leveraging the ESCO's finances in totality. I think we haven't nailed down which methodology we're going to use at this point in time.
So the RFP does not foreclose us.
Correct.
Doing. And so I think that that's really important, and I don't know if we can take a sense of the council, but I hear you that sometimes money costs more in that method, but we obviously are, you know, a year away from any potential new revenue source on climate. And to me, to wait a year till we have cash up front when there's a model that would allow us to pursue these changes is worth it given the IPCC urgency. And so I don't know how we can, you know, whether we should do a straw poll and express some support for that. But I think that this is a really actionable solution that doesn't require waiting a year, so I don't want us to, personally.
And we'll make sure that we cover those parameters. We'll have to go through council to execute any contract and make sure that we're clear about those choices, how these dollars were not leveraged, and the selection process of the methodology we choose as part of that RFP process. We come through council, happy to hear input on a preferred methodology, but we'll run the numbers as well and understand exactly what the breadth of the investment could be using their funds versus ours, or some combination.
Thank you. And then if I might just add one comment, I've been emailing a little bit too about the bond, Elevate Denver bond, and not having a clear strategy to each time we touch a building, consider what other things can be done at the same time. I had the same concern around accessibility. We had an accessibility analyst over here looking at buildings, and we had an Elevate Denver bond project over here. I understand that there's been a way to bring those together. Climate needs to be the third leg of that stool. In my mind, it makes zero sense to have a bond team that's touching, what, something like 42 buildings in the city, separate from this type of an approach. So I think it's really important that that someone's job title include leveraging any bond investment for climate change, whether it is using this model or whether it's using bond dollars. So we are not looking at buildings in three separate portfolios for totally different purposes.
If I could, I'd like to have Laura weigh in on this, but is one of the areas where we didn't represent incremental investments in buildings through bond dollars in this overall number, but it is something we're doing. But Laura, can you talk about that?
It's my understanding it's no one's job to look at every project and find. I asked whether or not DDPHE or DDA,
Public Works.
The climate team. Okay. I asked the climate team whether they had anybody at the bond table who was responsible for finding those synergies and perhaps proposing new scope that would be cost effective rather than going back and touching the building later. And I was told there was no person responsible for that role specifically from the climate expertise standpoint. Not that there's no climate improvements in the bond, but that there was no one looking at, like, maybe you're working on a rec center because your pool has an issue, but you could be doing the lighting at the same time for an incremental cost, but it's sir cheaper than starting two projects rather than one. So that's what I'm talking about. Yes, I still want to hear from you, but I want to clarify. It's not that there's no climate in there. It's that there's no one looking at non-climate projects to see how climate could be added and why it would be cost effective to do that rather than doing a second contract 2 years, 3 years later. Does that make sense?
Yes,
thank you.
I can't speak to the presence of a climate person, but I would say definitely during the bond planning process, we had DDPHE, the Office of Sustainability, review almost every project request, the scope and pricing, to ensure that we had capacity to leverage for improvements to buildings, green areas, et cetera. So that was the early baselining effort. Currently now, we're looking holistically across all capital investments to ensure we're leveraging them appropriately, that we are not duplicating work, and that we're ensuring that there's opportunities to go into buildings once to these energy efficiency improvements. And secondly, I just want to remind, Executive Order 123 requires us, for any building that we acquire, any new construction, any renovation, that we build to LEED standards and renovate that building, which includes energy efficiency and climate-related items. That's a concrete requirement for the city, and we're continuing to meet those requirements.
I'd just like to know whose job it is and what system they're using. That'd be great. Thanks.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Councilwoman Black.
Thank you, Mr. President. It reminds me what you're saying, Councilwoman Kanich, of the Public Works one build methodology. It's the same thing.
It is.
If Laura's in charge, I know she'll take care of it. Brendan, I have a question about the Environmental Services Enterprise Fund. Can you tell us more about that? Where does the revenue come from, and how much is there, and
what
to do with
me.
It?
Sure. Greg Thomas went into this the other day, just briefly. There was a bar chart that was shown during the DDPHE presentation for their budget. The Enterprise Fund is primarily funded through tip fees that come into the city. And there's other sources that are far more modest, but that's the primary revenue source, and the last third of their presentation goes into their revenue forecast, their fund balance forecast, and our use of funds to invest in strategies like this, as well as other loans, as well as composting vehicles.
Okay, thank you. I forgot about that, I will re-look at my materials. Thank you.
Anything else?
Nope.
All right. Thank you. Councilwoman Torres.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hi, Brandon. Is a staffing structure to come later? Because I know that there's been a transfer of a number of staff from different departments, and wondering how they fall into the strategy areas and pillars that were identified, if we have the right people for the right goals.
So there's a base staffing structure, and I should let Bob and Greg weigh in on this as well, but I could give you a high-level overview. There's an existing staffing structure. These 11 positions are supposed to add to the capacity of that team, but I think we're going to be going through a deliberative, socialized process with partners to really talk about the breadth of the organization. So we've kind of reserved positions to advance these efforts, but I think we have some more conversations with council, partners, and the agencies to make sure that we have kind of a unified, thoughtful structure. But we wanted to make sure we allocated enough dollars in the budget to allow for that to happen, so we weren't coming back and asking for dollars in 2020. We wanted to make sure we were demonstrating that commitment in the budget itself.
Okay. And then I would love to, both in what we see, but also in the process that's undertaken, because it's such an opportunity as something's being created brand new, to make sure that the Race and Social Justice Initiative is part of the administrative build of the internal office as well as those goals.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Councilwoman Sawyer?
Thank you, Mr. President. I actually had a lot of the same questions as Councilwoman Torres around the build-out of the staffing portion of this. And in the $8 million that is the new $8 million that is establishing this, I guess in here, and I understand it's incredibly complicated with lots of different agencies, can you just kind of break down for me exactly where the $8 million new dollars are being allocated separate from everything else that we're looking at here?
Sure. I think I've covered some of it earlier in the slides, but are you looking for specific reference points in the documents itself?
If you can't do it now, understand why it's extremely complicated, but I'm just really trying to find a determination of exactly where the new dollars are versus where there are dollars that are coming from other places. It's just not clear to me. So if you wouldn't mind kind of breaking out the specifics a little further, that would be great.
We'll itemize essentially this pie chart so that way you have it broken down into detail.
Yeah,
and,
that'd be great.
With their locations in each of the organizations as it currently stands.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Thanks.
Thank you, Councilman. Councilman Cashman.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is more of a statement, but it's certainly related. First of all, it's tremendously exciting for the first time to be gathering all this information in one place, especially on this particular day, as President Clark said. But he read at the beginning of the meeting the statement that says, as we plan our city, being sure we're addressing climate change is our overarching guide. So as every development comes before us now, that needs, what those words tell me is that needs to be at top of mind. So I just think that we need to figure out what that means. So if we have a large development, I think we all understand that some degree of density is a responsible environmental part of city planning. But if we're going to densify and tell our community, we want you to come to and from these locations. If we do that without a commitment to either have the city or the developer pay for improved bike lanes and improved sidewalks so that people can get to and from without using their vehicles, then I don't know that that development will meet that demand that we address reducing our carbon footprint as the overarching guide. So I think there's a discussion we need to have whether that fits into our existing criteria by which we legally have to address development, or whether we need to look at broadening those criteria. So I don't know if anyone from CPD cares to come.
Evelyn and Ulis are here to talk about those two items.
Good morning, Evelyn Baker. I'm the Interim Executive Director of Community Planning and Development, and your point is right on, Councilmember Cashman. That's something that we touched on in the CPD budget presentation earlier this week, acknowledging that there is this need to have better coordination between the density supporting infrastructure along with the actual private development that's happening. So as I said earlier this week, that's absolutely on our radar and something that we look forward to working with Public Works and other agencies across the department to do a better job of coordinating those two important pieces.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Councilman. Councilwoman Gilmore.
Make sure everybody's aware here, because we didn't get a chance to speak at our budget presentation in detail around our TDM strategy, which is specifically focused on development. So our TDM stands for Transportation Demand Management, and it's a new policy that we're moving forward with. We did go to committee, I believe, about a month or two ago to talk in more detail about what this means, and it's really to help incentivize alternative modes of transportation for new development that's coming online. And so that's going to be another game changer that we have not had as a part of our toolbox to ensure that we're leveraging new development to encourage alternative modes of transportation.
Mr. President, I just wanted to, I appreciate and very excited about the new TDM strategy. It's long awaited, but my point is that as we assess these developments, more than just a strategy, I think there needs to be a committed funding source so that it moves from the point of this is what we'd like to do to we've got the money to actually do this to affect our transportation system. So thank you.
Thank you, Council. Councilwoman Gilmore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I you know, to Councilman Cashman's point, you know, how we're asking on each slide deck, how is race and social justice embedded in the decision-making process, it would be transformational, I think, for our city to have climate and sustainability also embedded in every decision, and that we get the recipe on how exactly that is going to be embedded so that we have transparency for our citizens of Denver to know exactly what we're doing, and definitely tracking where Councilman Cashman was going as far as bike lanes, sidewalks, different mode shares, but where is the conversation, I guess, with RTD? Because there has been a bit of pushback, or does RTD have the capacity, if we were successful in encouraging more bike lanes, sidewalks, and I'm thinking about folks that live in Green Valley Ranch or live in Bear Valley, the perimeter of our city, where is the conversation with RTD if we're successful in getting single occupancy vehicles off of the road? Do they truly have the capacity to take on more passengers, and how, as a city, are we going to have that conversation or help support that?
Well, I'll ask Euless to come back to the microphone.
Again, Euless Clackley, Executive Director, Denver Public Works. So we are very aware of the direction that the city is going in with respect to transit. We mentioned again in our presentation of how we as a department, as a city, are going to be heavily investing into transit to provide more transit services that are supplementing the existing either bus routes throughout the city and county of Denver. We do meet with RTD leadership on a monthly basis to go through our plans as we move forward with the second phase of implementing our Denver transit plan over the next couple of years. So it has to be a collective effort. To the point with respect to capacity, it's an important point, and this is why we have to step in and lean in and invest into transit more, because RTD is a regional transit provider. It's one of many cities throughout their service territory, and so to place all of the expectation for that one regional entity to provide all the transit services is very difficult. And so I truly believe that it's an opportunity for us as we move forward with the direction for our department, the direction of hopefully a new DOT, that we'll be in a position from an organizational standpoint to invest heavily in the transit and satisfy some of the transit capacity needs that exist.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Councilwoman Ortega.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. President, I should say. So, Mayor, I understand you got a chance to ride in an EV car yesterday, right? Sorry you didn't get to ride in a hydrogen car that was out there, because that technology is so similar to our electric vehicles, and we just completely keep glossing over the utilization of hydrogen. We have a number of businesses in our city. Kroger uses hydrogen-fueled forklifts. We've got other people looking at doing fleets with hydrogen. And so this is an incredible technology that uses the fuel cell similar to the electric vehicles. And NREL has been working in this arena for many, many years and has worked with the state of California around rolling out all of their fueling stations. And as we continue to move in a direction of looking at more and more electric vehicles, and when we create new fueling stations, we should be looking at the opportunity for hydrogen and where we can capture that as energy for one of the technologies that helps move us towards our climate goals. The next thing I want to talk about is I'm not sure how much of a role we play in encouraging homeowners, and especially low-income homeowners, that are eligible for solar on their homes, where we could be, and there's a number of programs that will install it for free, and the rebates will be expiring before too long. And so this is another area where I think we can make some strides in addressing some of our goals in achieving our goals. And then the last piece is when we talk about the TDM strategy, I think the important thing is to do as much of this upfront as possible, so we're not scrambling and trying to deal with, you know, how many trip generations can come into an area. And if we're capping the number of trips, then we need to be very clear that we're not going to keep approving or sending more rezone applications into an area where we know we're already going to exceed the cap with the rezones that have already come in, even though the development hasn't occurred. So we need to be cognizant of that. And, you know, some of us are talking about going back and tweaking the zoning code so that we can see some of that stuff up front as part of a rezone application, so that it's not just left to, figure out on the back end. So I think those things are really important for us to hone in on. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Councilwoman Gilmore.
Thank you, President Clark. I wanted to ask Dakota, who's a student with Denver Public Schools, to go ahead and come up to the microphone. She had a specific question that she wanted to pose, and we can see which city agency. And so thank you for being here, and thank you for taking the day to make sure that folks are aware of issues with the climate. So go ahead, Dakota.
Of course, thank you all for supporting student voice and leadership. That's really powerful to us. A lot of us in the back, we were just wondering, in regards to the private sector, what measures are being taken to reduce emissions of CO2, because in the presentation, that was shown to be one of the leading causes.
I think Greg Thomas should come up and talk about that.
So the private sector is pretty important in terms of moving forward, because we have a lot of inconsistency, let's say, across the United States, right, or across the world. And so in the absence of mandates or policies that then would apply to every car that's purchased, every building that's built, some of that can be controlled at the local level, some of that can be controlled at the state level, and ultimately, hopefully, we'll get more action and leadership at the federal level as well. And so in the absence of that, what we really need to push on, and we need to support those
corporations, organizations that are stepping up and trying to make really meaningful reduction targets, right? But a lot of times that is not necessarily within the span of control of local government. But at the same time, supporting people who are advocating for that, including staff in the city, can be important. So it's really, at this point, there's some positive momentum. I would say it's a little bit uneven, depending on what part of the world you're in. But I think there's some positive signs that we've even heard as recently as this morning with Amazon and ordering 100,000 electric delivery vans. It's pretty significant, but we have a long ways to go there.
Thank you, Greg, and thank you, President Clark. I asked the students if they had specific questions they'd like to pose, and that was the question that Dakota came up with, which I think is spot on, and would just like to encourage all students and all residents of Denver to stay very connected to this conversation, because it's going to really take all of us working together to make a difference. So thank you. Thank you, President Clark.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Councilman Hines?
Thank you, Mr. President, and I'm sorry I'm up again. I wanted to echo Councilman Cashman's comment about race and social justice and the RSGI initiative and tying climate change. As we know, they are highly related. As Councilwoman Sedabaca knows, we have the not-so-enviable position of having the most polluted zip code in the nation. And that also happens to be in an underserved community. Sorry, I'm speaking for you again, Councilwoman. But it is very important, and I think I want to second his Councilman Cashman's sentiment about making sure that we have climate change as a metric. Another thing that I realized I neglected to mention, I talked about the 200,000 people moving to Denver by 2040. Director of Public Works, Ulis, if we don't give people viable alternatives to cars, they'll bring at least 200,000 cars with them as well. And so if our transportation is number two now, I realized that I didn't connect the dots in my previous comment, but it will be number one if we don't make meaningful investment in non-car transit. And then to the point that was just made a moment ago, we are only Denver. We can only control the city, but we can set a model for other cities to use. And I would, you know, we have the unenviable position of having the worst polluted zip code, but we can become enviable. And I am excited to work with the mayor and my colleagues on council to be that role model on furthering our commitment to climate change, or the positive side of climate change. We don't want the bad part of climate change. But anyway, thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Councilman. Councilwoman Torres.
Thank you so much. It just occurred to me, I didn't see anything in here about the existing nonprofit energy efficiency program and their board from the Office of Strategic Partnerships.
That was another area that we missed reflecting in our baseline expenditures. I actually had a call in to HRCP and Jay Salas as well. There are some other programs that we offer some energy efficiency incentives through HRCP programs that we didn't capture in here either. So that was that's something we'll add to the deck.
Okay. Significant. It's a $2
yes.
million dollar investment
yes,
every
absolutely.
Year.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Councilwoman Sawyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just one last question that I wanted to ask about sort of strategic plan for the Office of Sustainability is the metrics that we're using to measure success here. Obviously, you know, the overarching, we need to meet our climate sustainability goals. We need to exceed our climate sustainability goals. But what specific metrics and on the tiny level are we using to make sure that we are achieving these goals, to make sure that the dollars that we are putting towards these different initiatives are actually being successful in moving the needle towards those larger overarching goals, and who's got their eye on that?
So you know, we are in a time of transition with the office being kind of reconvened, if you will, and added to. I will just say that a number of the investments that are in that office's professional services are around data and analytics and making sure that we could go from that. I think what you're seeing and you're making the point of, these are very outcome-driven metrics that are at a very high level, but you need something that brings it down to day-to-day operations. I think those metrics are being funded in the 2020 budget. I know the team has been working on that as well. Please, Greg, if you'd like to join in on that.
That's an excellent question. And, you know, until today, let's say up till this point in time, we have really worked on the high-level metric, which is obviously greenhouse gas, total greenhouse gases, right? But that's great, but there's a lot of things that feed into that. If you look at specific programs, Energize Denver, our commercial building benchmarking ordinance, that is something where we can measure compliance on an annual basis. So our most recent round of submittals, we have about 91% compliance, which is great, and it certainly beats our peers throughout the United States. But it's 91%, and we can do better. And Brendan's right in terms of, as this new office is formed, that will be up to the team and to the leadership to really start to craft those metrics around all of these programs so that you understand how they all roll up to the ultimate goal.
That's great. Well, thank you. And I just appreciate that you've got your eyes on that and that it's part of the conversation, because I love the sort of larger, bigger picture here that we're looking at. But I think that, you know, we need to also be looking at those tiny, minute changes, because that's where the real change gets made. That's where the real progress gets made. So thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Mayor, did you also want to get on?
Just briefly, if I can. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Councilwoman Sawyer. Very intuitive question you ask about that. It's also one of the reasons why we set this up to not be activated until July of 2020. You know, you can set up an office for the sake of setting it up, but the reality is, if we want to make sure it's effective, you want to make sure that the team, the community, the administration, city council have had a chance to collaborate to identify what are the benchmarks or the areas in which objectives we want to drive toward. And having set up now the Office of Housing or the Department of Housing and Transportation, I can tell you it's a lot more involved than just setting up an office. You want something for folks to drive toward, pardon the pun. And that's why, in working with Councilman Clark, I said if we could move this until July, that will allow for the teams to kind of work together on putting together, you know, this office appropriately so that we're effective when we open the doors for the first time. So great question, very intuitive, and that's exactly why we're waiting until July.
Thank you, Mayor. Did I miss anybody? Councilman Ortega?
So I just wanted to ask about how we are thinking that as we move more towards, a green energy, that we will have businesses that focus on, you know, how to roll this out. I mean, we're doing that with green roofs, with, certain companies that install solar. As we're looking at bringing forward a new MBE, WBE ordinance, we just finished the disparity study for all of that. It would be helpful for us at least to be thinking about how, and I don't know that this would all just automatically fit under the existing ordinance, to ensure that a lot of those businesses that are doing the installs, if you will, also reflect the diversity of our community. And so I don't know that we've even thought about that or talked about it as part of the conversations with bringing that new ordinance forward, but they may very well just fall under construction categories, but if they're specifically green businesses, I don't know that we're going to at some point need a whole new category to include. So I just want to make sure that we're capturing women and minority businesses as part of the folks that do that work as well.
Great. All right. Anybody else? I have a few questions here. First of all, again, I want to say thank you for putting this together, and I know this is the first time that we've done it. I'll jump on what Councilwoman Sawyer said, and I think, you know, as we move forward now looking at budget through this new lens, tying it to some of those metrics. So, we had a lot of glide path metric slides in committee, in Councilman Cashman's committee, when we were talking through where are we on these glide paths, but starting to tie some of where are we missing the mark, And what does that then translate into in terms of what we're funding and what would funding look like to get us all the way to some of these science-based standards that we need to meet through IPCC and some of our adopted goals. So I'd love to see us continue as we evolve this to really tying into those metrics, breaking it down to this year, what does it take to get onto that glide path and what does that translate into dollars? A couple questions for CPD. We are, and this also speaks to the question about what are we doing for the private sector, and we have our new building code that is being worked on and our stretch code that is going to be a green code. So I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about that. And then my question was, I was digging through the budget trying to see in some of my early conversations, one of the ideas was to have the stretch code is going to be greener and closer to some of these IPCC standards than the required code, but how do you get people to choose a stretch code versus the required code? And so there was some talk about expedited permitting. I can't find that in the budget book. Maybe I'm just missing it, but are we funding that? What does it look like to fund that to actually have a green code as a stretch code that people will use that won't just sit on a shelf?
Great question. Again, Evelyn Baker, Interim Director of CPD. So one of the things that you heard in the context of the budget conversation this week was our projections in terms of what we expect to see in 2020 in terms of permit volume, permit valuation, these types of things. You're correct that there is not a separate budget item related to incentivizing applications that are taking advantage of the stretch code. It is our hope that with the slight softening or normalization in the market that we will have the capacity within our existing resources to provide some type of incentive in terms of an expedited review or something along those lines with our existing resources. We do not expect there to be day one, once we flip the switch and make this stretch code available, to see a deluge or flood of applications coming in. We hope that would be an amazing outcome if that does happen, in which case we would have to make sure we have the resources and reshuffle some things around with our existing resources to provide the incentive for those applications. Realistically, what we expect to see is sort of a trickle. So some initial applications taking advantage of the stretch code and wanting to push the envelope in terms of their green construction design. And we think we have the capacity to handle that, to incentivize that with our existing resources. One of the other things I'll note is that there's an education component to this, and we think the design community would benefit from some additional education to how to design to these new standards. And that's something actually that we would look forward to partnering with the new office, and I haven't got the name completely right, Climate Change Office, I'll call it that, to work with them in our education efforts to make sure that we've got the design community ready to take advantage of those new standards.
Okay, thank you. Is there somebody from the team back here who can speak a little bit more to the incentives, these climate incentives? And I know you covered it on a different slide, kind of went through some of them, but could somebody talk to us a little bit more about that money? What are those incentives, how do those incentives work? How are those going back into the community? Is that also incentives that are being offered to private sector folks? So somebody who can just give us a little bit more of an overview on that?
Yeah, thanks, Greg.
I can take a crack at a couple of those items. So, one of the incentives we're looking at is the residential market, right? We have a fair number of work that's been done around the commercial buildings, and rightly so, because they're the largest piece of the pie. But residential is not insignificant. And so residential, generally, there's an upfront cost, right? And so while you may get paid back over X number of years, and then after that, it's all, additional, sometimes you need to be able to incentivize things to happen. And then you get that early kind of feedback in terms of, this is a really great thing, residential, converting from, let's say, gas heating to something else, like a heat pump, which is complicated. I don't understand it myself, so I couldn't explain it very well to you, but it's an example of where you need to kind of incentivize, test it out, see what the uptake is, and then see what the feedback and the performance and the savings are. So those are examples. You've heard through the Energize Denver work over the years, or the Green Buildings Ordinance, you could have incentives around that, not only around expedited permitting, which a lot of people would like, but
there could be other incentives, right? But you, but that requires a much larger source of funding. And then on the vehicle side, right? Transportation, we can't forget about. And so whether it's electric or whether it's hydrogen, I don't think that we're necessarily agnostic in terms of which technology it is. We're just looking at what's the market providing right now, right? And right now the movement seems to be electric. State has great incentives. Colorado is one of those states that also offers an incentive on top of the federal. And right now, the cost of ownership of an electric vehicle, if you're in the market for a new vehicle, a lot of us have two vehicles. So why can't one of those be electric? If we could just have 50% of our fleet become electric, it's not going to solve the congestion problems, but it can really make a dent in our air quality and our greenhouse gas problems.
And the new money for those incentives, is that a whole new incentive program, or were the new money is going to incentive programs that we already have to put more money to those same incentives?
It's the one I mentioned on the residential side is the new incentive. And so that's how we kind of, it's a pilot, admittedly, right? But we have to pilot things to be able to see, can we scale this up and will it make a significant impact?
Great. I think that's a really exciting piece of this budget. So, all right. Well, I just want to say again, thank you. It's very exciting to see in one place all of the great work that the city is doing to tackle this. I want to again thank all the staff and Brendan for being our chief climate officer, I guess, for the day and presenting this, but and also thank the mayor and the administration. It is so exciting to see the climate office in our 2020 budget, and we're going to continue to launch soon the stakeholder process to really look at what is the funding gap that we have, what do we need to close it, and how do we find those funds to continue to really tackle this problem and do everything that we as a city can do. It's a lot to be excited about, but I think that we need to continue to ask ourselves, are we doing enough, and are we doing what we're doing fast enough? And I know that I will certainly, and I think there are a lot of other members of council who will continue to push and ask those questions as we move forward. But thank you very much. And with that, that concludes our final budget hearing on the 2020 budget. Thank you all for sticking through this, especially on a week that we started with their Monday night meeting going till midnight. And thank you to all the staff who worked really hard and I know moved their schedule around to get us through this expeditiously so that we can now go back and have time to review the budget on the next deadline. So thank you very much, and that concludes our budget hearings.
Thank you.
Until now, climate change has mostly been a story about challenges. Challenges to our communities, challenges to our economies, and challenges to the natural environment that sustains life on Earth.